Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right. As I promised before the end of that last hour, I was talking with you, Amy, in New Jersey, and you kind of set the table for me in terms of talking about wanting to come back to the faith and come back with your family and kind of get things back on track. And I think the last thing you said was that did I hear it right? You were in church for a while. You sort of sat and were quiet in the church and the priest went by, but he didn't come back and you wanted to talk to him. That's kind of where we left off, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So the end of service. And so I sat there and I was kind of like, maybe he'll come back in or maybe I can have a conversation. But he never came back.
Okay. Fair enough. And, you know, he obviously is not a mind reader, so he couldn't know what was on your mind.
Yeah.
You know who does know what's on your mind, though? And that's Jesus. Here's what he said. I know you're familiar with this verse, but he says, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me," he says, "for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." That's Matthew 11, 28 through 30. And if you want to jot that down, I don't know if you have a pen handy, but if you jot that down, that might be a passage to just meditate upon. And if you have some time to spend in the church, maybe in the middle of the day when there aren't people coming and going, you could just sit with Jesus. He's in the tabernacle, you know, and just sit there with him and ponder his message to you. You know, his yoke is easy, his burden is light. And if you, and it sounds like you are, you're feeling burdened and heavily weighed down, and Jesus is saying, "Come to me and I will give you rest." That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. So in doing that, you're first turning to the only one who can really alleviate this problem for you, and that's God. That's the Lord, right? So what steps might he want you to take to further that? So spend time with him. Pray, let him know. I mean, he already knows, but what does Jesus say? Your Father in heaven already knows what you need, but he delights in you asking for it. So that would be, to my mind, the first step in this journey. That would be to remind the Lord of his promise about lightening your load and giving you rest, and then watch it unfold. So I don't want to ask any, you know, prying questions, but if I can just ask you this question, has it been a long time or has it been a while since you went to confession?
So going back to more of the guilt, so I was baptized, but I never got to do my confirmation.
Okay.
So I've never experienced that. You know, okay. It breaks my heart every single time I've gone to church and I can't take communion. So that's another added item. You know, I want to do those things. I don't know how to go about doing that. So I want to be able to go up. I want to be able to take all that.
Yeah, I can help you. There's a path forward for that. So you were baptized Catholic, but did you ever receive your first Holy Communion?
I did not.
Okay. And it probably wasn't your fault, right? Because you were raised in a family that maybe they weren't very fervent, and perhaps you never had a chance to do those things that others get a chance to do. So fair enough, and that's not your fault. Now that you're in this position where you realize where you want to go, the next step would be to start the process of returning to the church in the fullest sense. So an RCIA program, the term RCIA, it's an acronym. It means Rite of Christian Initiation of Adults. Now, since you're already baptized, there are two more sacraments of initiation, and you know about those. That's the Holy Eucharist and Confirmation. But the church has the doors wide open and says, we'd love for you to come back. Come on back. And if you get into this RCIA program, the idea is that you will move toward being formally received into the church and receiving those other sacraments. So you, before you receive Holy Communion, when the time comes, you'll make the sacrament of confession, also known as reconciliation. And that's where you'll just confess your sins to the priest. In this case, it would be all the way back since the time you were, you know, 7, 8 years old, the age of reason. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to talk in detail about that now. We can do that at another time if you want. But that would be one step that you would take. That would be a sacrament that would prepare you spiritually to be in the state of grace and then receive Jesus in Holy Communion. And you'd also be confirmed, and you would make a profession of faith, and you would be completely, fully integrated into Jesus and the Catholic Church. And the sacraments and all of that is all yours. And believe me, Jesus and the Church are saying, come on in, come on in, come on in, come on in. And all of that awaits
That's
you.
That's exactly what I feel. Yeah. I do That's feel good. That. I do. I have so much, and I think it's like the guilt and the anxiety of the guilt. There's just so much that has happened, and I want to do this for myself. I'd love to have my son do this. Today's his birthday, and you know, I introduced. I don't know if you've heard of it, but there's that app that's going around, and. I started the Lent, the 40 days of Lent on there. So I introduced it to my family, see if they wanted to join. But because of the so much information, it just, it's like my wires get crossed and then I don't know which is the right way. I've invested in buying so many books. Some of them started, some of them I haven't. I have two different Bibles. And it's
I have a suggestion.
I guess I don't. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Sorry. I have a suggestion.
No. Go
there's
ahead.
There's a great resource that's in video form, so DVD and maybe even digital download. But it's called Symbolon. Do you have a pen handy? You can write this down.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Symbolon. S-Y-M. B-O-L-O-N, Symbolon, and it's a Greek word, and we would translate it roughly into English as the creed, like, you know, the Apostles' Creed or the Nicene Creed. Mm-hmm. It's a statement of what we believe. So this program, and it's available from the Augustine Institute. So you can acquire this on their website, the Augustine Institute, and it's a multi-part It's a multi-part instruction in who is Jesus? Why should we believe in him? What did he teach? What are the basics of the faith? How do we relate to God through the sacraments and so on? It's a very well done, and it's a systematic program that will take you from the shallow end of the pool into the deeper end of the pool gradually. So you're going to grow in your knowledge of the faith. It'd be good for you to watch it with your kids, watch it with your husband, watch it as a family, if you can do that. So that'll give you a course of formation that's thoroughly Catholic, very accurate, and you'll learn an awful lot. Get involved, get registered in the RCIA program.
Yeah.
And here's another thing, Amy. Nowadays, it's not like it used to be, for a variety of reasons, but nowadays there's not the same consistency among parishes. Some parishes are a little more, you know, kind of more far out there on the left. Some parishes are much more attentive to the gospel and attentive to Jesus and tradition and things like that. So you could do a little bit of, you know, looking around and seeing the different parishes. My advice would be, find a good traditional parish in your area where the faith is preached and whatever might be kind of silly or, you know, things that are not substantial. Find a parish where the preaching is good, the faith is taught in its entirety, and they're not leading people down a path that would take them away from the church. Unfortunately, there are here and there some parishes kind of like that. But do a little due diligence, and you find a parish like that, then get involved in the RCIA program. Register for that. Start that process. And that way you can know that you are on the path that's going to lead you directly to the sacraments in peace, in happiness. And even if problems in the family and whatnot don't go away, and typically they don't, at least you're going to have that inner peace. Or as Jesus said, that verse that I quoted from before, you know, when Jesus said, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Isn't that beautiful?
That is beautiful. Okay. All right. This sounds good. And you mentioned something that is another, probably like, and I'm not going to take up any more of your time, so I apologize, any of this other callers. Avoiding the falling into the left-leaning, because that's another big deal for me that I'm trying to avoid. I'm trying to make sure that I stay away from. Is it just, would there be something specifically to look for? Obviously, there are going to be signs. I know there's some things that I've heard.
I'll give you some examples. I'll give you some examples.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's say, as you're considering different parishes in your area, let's say you find a parish where they have Stations of the Cross during Lent, and they have adoration, where they promote adoration of the Blessed Sacrament. Maybe 40 hours adoration would be one example of that. Parishes that are attentive to the poor and maybe have a soup kitchen, or they're involved in some way in outreach to the community, trying to help people who need help. These are all signs of this. But when you see an emphasis on adoration and on the pious prayers that are traditional, like Stations of the Cross is one example, benediction, the rosary, things like that, those are all good signs. Those are the kinds of things you're going to say, this is a parish that really gets it. If you see a parish where they're all about, let's do political protests and let's go picket at nuclear facilities or things like that, that's, it's a sign that this parish is probably majoring in the minors and minoring in the majors. So to find a parish where they're focused on what's important, that's a good sign. That's where you can get a sense of.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Now,
so
one
very
last
much.
Thing, if you don't mind. I know I've kept you a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm here for you, okay? 3 hours a day. I'm here for you. I'm here for your family. Please keep listening to Relevant Radio. Get the app on your phone, and there are a lot of prayer resources for you on that app.
Oh, okay. All right. That's the one thing I haven't done. Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
You're
bless
welcome.
You all, and thank God for Relevant Radio. I'm so happy and pleased that I found the station. And
me too.
It's definitely a great step.
Me too, Amy. I can hear. excuse me. I can hear the smile in your voice, and I'm happy for you.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes. Call back. Okay. Let's
all
stay
right.
in touch.
Yes, I will.
Thank you. 888-914-9149 is the number to dial. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Colorado and talk to Andrew. Hi, Andrew. Welcome.
Hi, Patrick. So my brother, like me, was raised Catholic, but he's now kind of drifted off. So he's either atheist or agnostic. Can't really tell.
Okay.
But the other day, he challenged my mom on some questions regarding Christianity. And she was kind of asking me to help her out to respond to him. And one of the questions that he asked, it was he was given kind of the typical atheist arguments, I would say. And one of the questions was, who created God? And I told my mom to respond that, since God is not finite, he was not created, he's infinite, and therefore he simply is. But my brother didn't really like that response. And he said that saying that God existed in a dimension without time really doesn't hold any weight because it just defies everything we know. So I'm wondering if that response to him is valid or if there's a better argument for that. And then my second question is...
Well, let's do with this question first, okay. Because that's a big question. So the first thing I would point out is, well, I can understand if you find that answer inadequate, but it doesn't mean it's not true. It's still true that God has always existed. It's true. Whether we can understand it or not, it's a different story. But there is no other answer to that question. Nobody made God. God did not come into existence. There are ways that you can demonstrate this. And what I would propose is you look at what are known as the five ways or the five proofs for the existence of God that were primarily promoted by St. Thomas Aquinas. And I'll give you a quick overview of what they are, and then I'll give you a resource on where you can really learn them and master them. And this is something anyone can master. And your mom can learn how to do this, you can learn how to do this, and it will put the emphasis back where it belongs, and that is on his objection to belief in God, his objection to the existence of God. So the five proofs, typically they go in this order. The first one would be the argument or the proof from motion and change. And what that means is that everything is not only moving, but everything is changing. And we can see that in everything. It's true of the universe as such. It's true of everything in the universe because we exist in time. Everything is moving not only in terms of locomotion, all the subatomic particles are moving and we're moving, but we're changing. We're getting older. Things get bigger, they get smaller, they break in half, they change in a variety of ways. Now, that kind of movement is known as the movement from potency to act. You have the potential to become older, and you have the potential to get bigger, get smaller, come into existence, go out of existence. And when these things happen, it's a movement from the potential that the thing has to the act. So everything that is moved by something outside of it and independent of it and before it. So if you were to snap a pencil in half, the pencil has the potential to be snapped in half, but it's not actually snapped in half until you do it. And that means that you have acted upon this thing to cause the motion, to cause the change. And we see this throughout all of the created universe, everything in the universe. And so the point here is that these things cannot account for themselves. Each one has to receive this change, this movement from something outside of it and before it. So there can't be an endless number of things infinitely stretching back into the past with no source of something or someone who is not moved. We might say an unmoved mover. And that being we call God. And without that being in existence, nothing else could move or change. There'd be no way to account for any of it. But we see it, so we know it's true. The second one is known as efficient causality. And that has to do with nothing comes from nothing. So everything that exists has a cause. And the cause, similarly, is outside of that thing. And in time, at least, it's anterior to it. So you, as a human being with a body, the efficient cause of your body is the act of your mother and father uniting in marriage and causing you. The microphone that I'm speaking into was caused by the designers and the people who fashioned the materials and built the microphone. The building that you're inside of right now is caused by these things that preceded it in time. It didn't exist until those things caused it to exist. And this is true of all the things in the universe. And we can say it's true of the universe itself. There can't logically be an infinite regress of caused beings without there being at the very beginning an uncaused being, and that being we call God. Another way to look at this is the third way, and this is the evidence from time and contingency. And as you can see, these are in some sense a variation on a theme. But in the case of contingency, it means that things don't have to exist. I don't have to exist. You don't have to exist. This planet doesn't have to exist. You may say, well, what do you mean? Well, what I mean is we don't it's not necessary that any of these things exist, and we can prove it because at one time they didn't exist. At one time I didn't exist. At one time you didn't exist. At one time this planet did not exist. And yet it's here, and I'm here, and you're here. So we can see this vast array of things in the universe, trillions upon trillions upon trillions or quintillions or whatever, and the universe itself. And if there are alternative universes, let's include them as well. So if there's a multiverse out there and there are trillions of universes, we include all of that as well. All of these things are contingent. They don't need to be here. And again, we know that because at one time they weren't here. So there again, there cannot be, logically speaking, an infinite regress of contingent, unnecessary beings, each one coming into existence at a certain point, unless there's some necessary being at the very beginning of all this, and his existence is necessary for anything to exist, and that being we call God. The fourth way is to look at this would be the proof from design. And you can look at this by saying that we see in the physical world evidence of things like laws, the laws of mathematics, the laws of chemistry, laws of gravity and things like that. If there were no God to impose meaning on what would otherwise be chaos, not only should we ask the question, why does anything exist at all? But why is it that the things in the created universe that do exist, why do they follow laws? Why is that? Where did that come from? And there's a lot that can be said on this topic, but ultimately you can't have order unless there's a mind that imposes that order, at least at that level. It can't be purely random chaos that would account for this. And that being who does this is we call God. And then the fifth one would have to do with degrees of perfection. And this is where we consider that we only know things good, better, best, taller, shorter, longer, you know, that kind of thing. The ways in which we express degrees presupposes a perfect standard by which we measure the straightness or the perfect circle, things like that. And we can also look at things like truth, beauty, goodness, etc. We know them when we see them, and there are various degrees of these things. This is beautiful, that's more beautiful. So we recognize instinctively that in order for us to have this perception of degrees of perfection, there must be some ultimate standard by which we can measure, and that being we call God. Now, I'm up against my timeout time, so I've got to leave it at that. But when I come back, I'm going to say goodbye to you now, but I'm going to come back and give you a couple of recommendations for resources that you can use in the next conversation that you have. There's some really good ones out there. I'll take a break, but I'll be right back right after this. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Looking for a new job? How about one that offers you opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester, an Illinois life insurance company not available in all states.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
Wow, never a dull moment here on the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you for listening. I promised I would give a couple recommendations on the issue of how to respond to typical atheist claims. The first book is called Handbook of Catholic Apologetics, co-authored by Father Ron Tosselli and Dr. Peter Kraft. And it's really, really good. And the first roughly 20% of it, it takes on all of the standard major atheist arguments against the existence of God, such as they are, and many of the minor ones as well. And it just systematically, you know, sets up the pins and knocks them down. It just does a really good job. So my advice would be get a hold of that book, Handbook of Catholic Apologetics. I'd also recommend books by Ed Fazer, who is a professor of philosophy at Pasadena City College. One more recent book of his that I have is called Five Proofs for the Existence of God. Now, it's not the five ways that I just described to you, but it includes one of the five ways. This is looking at a broader array of proofs for the existence of God, and that's what it's called, Five Proofs for the Existence of God by Edward Fazer. It looks like Fesser, but it's pronounced Fazer, F-E-S-E-R. I would also recommend a book by Ed Fazer on the same topic generally of atheism. It's called The Last Superstition, A Refutation of the New Atheism. Really good, really, really good. I would recommend watching the Biola debate between William Lane Craig and the late atheist author Christopher Hitchens. And it's really good. It's on the question, does God exist? And watch this top atheist try to fight his way out of a paper bag. I don't think it goes very well for him. But it's a full-on debate, moderated, and you're going to see how both sides fare in a public debate. I'd also recommend, and I'll leave it at this, get the Aquinas 101 videos on YouTube. They have a channel. It's from the Thomistic Institute. But you know, listen to me now and believe me later. If you get these videos, they have discrete topics on things like this. How do you explain the five ways for the existence of God, the five proofs? How do you talk about these things in a way that is intelligible to somebody who doesn't believe in God? These videos are all about 7-8 minutes long. They hit right to the point. They're very well done, and everybody should be watching these videos. So do check that out on YouTube. It's called Aquinas 101. All right, back to the phones now. Let's go to Benson in Norwalk, California. Hello, Benson.
Hey, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to.
Well, while my wife and I were looking for Catholic churches before we moved to Norwalk, we were Googling around Catholic Church in Google. And a couple of churches came about, St. Pius X, St. John of God, St. Judas de Tadeo. And praise God that the Holy Spirit led us to St. John of God. And one of the things in which I've learned was that Father Raymond, who is the parish over at St. John of God, said he was making an announcement about sacraments. And he said, he mentioned that someone went to San Judas Tadeo saying that they received sacraments, but he said that that church wasn't a Catholic church. Although on the front it says San Judas Tadeo Catholic Church, they are not Catholic. So my question is, and there's another one in Artesia that claims to be Catholic, but they're not. So I guess my question is, how do these, lack of a better word, bogus or counterfeit Catholic churches come about as far as, and I went to their website and they said they practice the things that are, you know, they practice the seven sacraments and so forth. So I'm not really sure how to form a question out of it, but that's
okay. I think I know what you mean.
Pretty much what I observed.
Yeah, so it can be a number of different things that cause this. Sometimes these are upstart churches that were started by a renegade Catholic priest who might have been dismissed from holy orders or dismissed from the priesthood, and he's just going to start his own church. And some of these guys, they do that, much to their eternal peril. And so they celebrate the sacraments, and they wear the vestments, and they do all that, and they might even put the word Catholic in the sign. That's one cause for some of these parishes. Some of them are breakaway churches that have left. Usually it also comes back to a priest typically. But in another category of people known as sede vacantists, some of them deny that there is a valid pope on the chair of Peter, and they say this goes back to, say, Pope Pius XII in the 1950s. He was the last valid pope, some say. Some go further back than that, Pope Pius XI and others. So in some cases, that's where these groups have started, and they would style themselves as the Catholic Church, even though they have broken communion with the Church. They fancy that they have maintained the Catholic faith, pure and unadulterated, when in fact they have severed themselves from Christ. They have severed themselves from the Catholic Church. And that's the genesis of some of those groups. Some of them are groups that have broken away from the church more recently over issues such as the Mass. They don't like the new rite of the Mass. They want the traditional Latin Mass. And I like the traditional Latin Mass too, but that's not the answer, to break away from the Catholic Church and start up your own homebrew chapel where you're going to, in essence, be the Catholic Church. That's another way that this happens. In some cases, it's something even older than that. It might be something that comes from the old Catholics who in Holland wound up leaving the Catholic Church in right around 1870, when the Catholic Church defined the dogma of papal infallibility, and some of them didn't like that. This also happened in Poland as well. And so they broke away from the Catholic Church and still call themselves Catholic, even though they're severed from the church as well. So the reason I give you four or five examples of that, Benson, is that there's no one explanation. It would depend upon which group and what their pedigree is. But in one way or another, they would fall into those categories. Does that help?
Yes, yes. Thank you very much. Since these priests may have broken away, and I guess there's a saying, once a priest, always a priest, are some sacraments still valid?
Yes. So if the priest, even though he's in egregious sin because he's doing something renegade, even if the priest has been dismissed or what have you, if he obstinately persists in celebrating the sacraments, they are illicit, meaning that they're illegal and they're also spiritually very destructive for him, he himself. Nonetheless, if he celebrates them with the proper form and matter and the proper intention, then they would be valid. So, and that would not be true for all sacraments, but in the case of the Holy Eucharist, it would be a valid Holy Eucharist. It would be illicit, and it would be a bad thing for him, truly, but it would be valid. In the case of confession or reconciliation, it would be invalid, because in order for him to validly celebrate that sacrament, he has to have the authority to do so. He has to have faculties, as they're called, given to him by the local bishop. And if those faculties are not present, then his attempt to absolve someone from their sins under the church's law would also be invalid. He would be able to validly baptize. Anybody can validly baptize, but he would certainly be able to do that. And he would be able to hear confessions. As far as marriage is concerned, he would be able to preside over marriage, but this is where it gets a little bit tricky, because the marriage, in order for it to be valid, because marriage, the sacrament of holy matrimony, is conferred between the spouses. The husband confers the sacrament on his wife, she confers the sacrament on him, assuming that both are baptized. But in the church's law, for the marriage to be valid, it has to be in a church, and it has to be witnessed by a minister of the church, so typically a priest, which he's not. So that would violate the canonical form. So in the case of marriage, that would be an invalid marriage. So it's on a kind of case-by-case basis with the sacraments. But if the Eucharist is what you're wondering about, you now have the answer to that question. Thank you. We're going to take a break. In fact, it'll be our last break before we have to wrap things up. And before we... Actually, you know what? Young Thomas, how long is that audio about mathematics? We might be able to squeeze that in before we have to take the break. How long is it?
Yeah, we could probably squeeze that in. It's 45 seconds.
Okay, yeah. Let's play this video. I found this online recently, and I thought I'd share it with you. This is a response to atheists using mathematics as a way of talking about a proof for the existence of God.
The existence of mathematics is one of the proofs that there must be a God. Because in a random, evolutionary, purposeless, accidental world, we wouldn't have math. And do you know what's so interesting is? See, math is orderly, it's absolute, and really many, many thinkers over the centuries have acknowledged that the reality of mathematics proves there must be a God. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe the teacher in a roundabout way, without getting himself fired, could allude to the fact that a secular Darwinian world has no explanation for the origin of math.
Our sponsor, Christendom College, offers our listeners free access to college-style principles classes at getprinciples.com. Sign up for free classes at getprinciples.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
All right, let's go to Las Vegas now and talk to Mike. Hi, Mike. Welcome.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. Sure. Here's my situation. I'm one of these reverts, I guess, where I was away from the church 30, 40 years, and then just kind of out of nowhere, 5 or 6 months ago, I just got bonked on the head or the heart or something. Go back, go back, go back. Mm. And I can only attribute that to I don't know what, people praying for me or what have you. So now I'm back, and I did the big confession, and I'm back in there all the way and eagerly and wholeheartedly and just absolutely loving it. But my family has not come with me. My wife, still disinterested. My two children, you know, nah, sort of thing. And I suspect this is a problem that a lot of people are having as people fall away and come back. And all I can think of is... you know, and I do. I pray about it every time. That's at the top of my thing. And so, I mean, what do you say to a person who's in this boat?
Well, I would say, number one, you're doing the right thing, and keep doing what you're doing, even though you're swimming against a current. I can understand. I've never been through it myself, so I don't know from personal experience, but I could understand how it would be. It would be difficult if your wife wasn't with you and didn't share this with you, and same with your kids. You kind of look odd to them, like, "Well, Dad's a Jesus freak now. Why is he all holy all of a sudden?"
Exactly.
You know, it didn't used to be that way, but now he is. But in the middle of all that, though, you're pursuing the pearl of great price. You're pursuing that object of inexpressible value in. You'll do anything to acquire it. So Jesus tells a story, a parable, of a man who discovers a treasure in a field. So he liquidates all of his money in everything so that he can buy that field, because he knows if he buys that field, he possesses this treasure. Now, this isn't to say that you liquidate your marriage or you turn your back on your kids or anything like that, but there is a certain sense in which you don't let anything get in your way. But the trick is doing that in a loving way, where you still maintain your love for your family. I mean, how could you not love them? And respect for your wife and all that. But let them see that you have found that pearl of great price, and you're going to lay hold of it. And what sometimes happens is that the spouse who doesn't immediately see it eventually does. And maybe in due time, by your good example, your wife may want what you have that she doesn't have. She'll
and that's what I'm hoping for. It was very strange this morning at Mass getting the ashes, and it was about the most emotional I've ever been at church my whole life, going back to when I was a little kid. And then it struck me later that I'm experiencing simultaneously the most joyous time in my life and the most sorrowful time in my life. I'm getting all emotional. This is great, and I want them to come along and have what I have, and they're just not there yet. So
yeah,
maybe they will. I hope.
But you know, there's another thing to think about too, Mike, is that there is a kind of joy in stepping out like that. I mean, think about on the day of Pentecost, Acts chapter 2. I mean, the apostles, they once the Holy Spirit came upon them, they didn't care who thought what about them. They went out and they told the truth, and many people believed, many people didn't believe, and they just said, "We're going to talk about Jesus." So I'm happy for you. I really am.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your insights and your, and I love your show, and I listen to it as often as I can.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you. Well, you know, that's just another thought. Maybe if you were to get your wife, maybe. If she says it's okay to put the Relevant Radio app on her phone, and encourage your kids to put the Relevant Radio app on their phones, maybe they'll start listening and they'll start catching fire too.
I'm going to do that. I will do that.
Great.
Good advice.
Great. Thanks,
Thank
Mike.
You.
And happy Ash Wednesday. Let's see. Let's go now to Cynthia in Traverse City, Michigan. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, Patrick. My question is, I was at Bible study last night, and we were talking about baptism and the washing away of original sin. And mm-hmm. one of our participants brought up the fact that what would have happened if Adam had chosen differently. Mm-hmm. And the question arose that God is all-knowing, but he proclaimed that God didn't know what Adam was going to do. And I am confused because if he's all-knowing, he has to know what Adam's choices are or our choices are in life. Your response?
Well, you're right about that. Who is it that said this? The leader of the Bible study?
No, one of the participants.
Oh, okay. Well, that's just an example of somebody who doesn't understand. And here's how you can know that. Anything that can be known, God knows. There's nothing that God doesn't know now that he could find out later. And the reason that must be so is because if that were true, it would be a limitation. It would mean that God is not, he's not perfect. He's not infinite because there's something he has yet to obtain. So in God, as God, he has the sum of all perfections, and he has them and is them, for that matter, infinitely. So his knowledge is infinite. There's no limit to his knowledge. So for somebody to pop up and say, well, God didn't know this, well, that's clearly somebody who doesn't understand God's nature. So you can safely ignore that because it's not true. God absolutely knew. What Adam and
There's
Eve
no,
would do.
There's no refutable answer I can give him?
Well, I think that I just gave it. The irrefutable answer is, if you think that God didn't know something and he had to wait to find out what it was, then you're not talking about God. You're talking about a creature. But if you're talking about God, and that is who we're talking about in the book of Genesis, it's impossible for God to not know something, because then that would be a limitation or an absence of something in his knowledge, and that can't be, because God is perfect in his knowledge, as I was saying. His knowledge is limitless. It's infinite. So he can't acquire something he doesn't already have, and if that were true, then he wouldn't be God. He'd be something mm-hmm. less than God. So that really is the irrefutable answer, ultimately.
Okay, I will talk with him again next week. So, I thank you for your time.
You're welcome, Cynthia. And if he would be interested in chatting with me, I would warmly welcome him on the program. If he disagrees, we can discuss it. Let's go to Marlene now in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Marlene.
Hi, Patrick. My most important question is a recommendation for a Bible for my 16-year-old daughter. She has learning challenges, ADHD, dyslexia. She also has something else that is a phonological, it's a hearing sort of disorder. But mm-hmm. you take all that away, she's an intelligent child. So, but it's hard, you know, to get to her. This is an offshoot that I'd be interested in you talking about, but we've been doing what we can to read the Bible at home and try to get her, you know, sparked by it. She went to the revival that is going on here in Kentucky at a Protestant university. And I don't know if you've talked about that or heard about that revival.
I have, yeah. The Asbury revival.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So anyway, she went with some friends, and she came back from that. And the first thing she said is, I want a Bible. And we said, mm-hmm. you have a Bible. But mm-hmm. I can understand so I'm looking for something that might reach her. Does that make sense? That she could be more accessible to her, because she is now interested. And we talked.
Sure. I would recommend the Ignatius Bible.
She needs a Catholic Bible. She was looking for
I'll
apps,
recommend one
and
too.
I said, Dan, you know, you need a Catholic app. So any suggestions, Patrick?
Yeah, I'll recommend one to you, Marlene. It's the Ignatius Bible. And you can get it from your local Catholic bookstore. It's published by Ignatius Press. It's the Revised Standard Version Catholic Edition. It's quite good. and it has some explanatory notes that would be helpful to her. And I think that would be a great Bible to give her. And it's Catholic, so it's not going to contain things that would be problematic the way, you know, non-Catholic Bibles sometimes do. So that's what I would recommend for her. I know that you can also get that on Kindle, and she could have it on her phone as well. If she has the free Kindle app on her phone, she can get the Ignatius Bible there as well and read it on her phone. So if she doesn't have it handy with her, she can read it that way as well. I hope that's helpful. Thank you. Let's go to Jake now in California. Good morning, Jake.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear
me? Sure. Yes.
Yeah. So I have a question about restitution. About 2 years ago, I started practicing the faith again. I was raised Catholic, but kind of just Christmas, Easter Catholic. And then recently, I had learned about the teachings of restitution to the owner, and if possible, for acts like crime or theft and things like that. And I kind of just started examining, and I went back. And I mean, when I was younger, years ago, I hung out with a bad crowd and had stolen many things. It just at parties, more of like a vice, nothing huge. But I reached out to some priests, and I've gotten differing opinions. One priest told me, "Oh, you don't need to do anything." Another priest told me, "Oh, just donate it all." But I read that it needs to be exact restitution to the person, and I struggle with scruples as well. So I've kind of just for the past 2 months been stuck of almost in like a state of despair because there's so much nuanced things. And
I think I can help
obedience
you.
To my confessor. Yeah.
I think I can help you. And it's a beautiful thing, Jake, that your experience is renewal in your conscience. It's a great thing. So thank God for that. My advice would be if you have the means of making restitution to the party himself or the business, if you stole from a business or something, You are not strictly obligated to do that, but it would be, I think, the preferable thing to do, especially if you can identify the person. So if it's somebody, you know, that you know, or you know how to reach this person, you can make restitution, and you can do it anonymously. You could do it in person, but then, of course, the person will know that you stole from him or you stole from that store or whatever, but that would be a noble thing to do. But even if you didn't do that, you could still make restitution by anonymously making up the money for what you stole. You don't have to worry about your scruples. The main thing is, and by the way, those who told you that you don't have to make restitution are incorrect. Restitution is something that if you can perform it, it must be done. So do it as best you can. And that way, and let me give you an example from my own life. When I was a young man, I bought something and I didn't finish paying for it to the tune of a couple hundred dollars. And I don't remember now why I didn't finish paying for it. I don't remember. I don't know if I forgot. I don't know if whoever it was moved on and I didn't know where he was. But anyway, many years went by and I knew this is a problem because in justice, I owed that money. So I took it to confession, and the priest gave me wise advice. He says, well, try and make restitution to that person, and if you can't because you don't know where he is or something like that, then take the amount of money and make a donation to a soup kitchen or give alms to a religious order or something like that. And that's what I did. So then I knew I had done it. God accepted it, and everything was good. That's what I would advise you to do. Just make restitution as best you can, and then you know that you've been forgiven.
Okay. I guess the only way I get stuck up is on the things that are more nuanced, like did I cause more expenses maybe from labor for vandalism or things like that that I had read needed to be factored in? And that's kind of where I get stuck, that I'm not making proper restitution.
Well, most likely you can't know with exactitude the exact to the penny amount of damage or theft. So you make a good faith estimate. Was it $1,000? Was it $5,000? Was it $10? Was it $100? And, you know, make a good faith estimate and take everything into account and then make restitution to that amount. Because God doesn't expect the impossible. He just wants you to do the best you can. All right. Until tomorrow, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.